While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon, Namibia, and a warm welcome to everyone joining us from near and far. Thank you for choosing Eagle FM. Welcome to On the Radar News Analysis, your trusted source for the latest news and updates from Namibia and beyond. It's Thursday, the 16th of January, 2026. And as the country prepares for the reopening of schools on Monday, many households are already settling back into the familiar rhythm of early mornings, packed lunch boxes, and school day routines. Now, as parents, learners, and educators make final preparations for the new academic year, today's bulletin will keep you informed on the issues that matter most, from education and community affairs to national developments shaping our daily lives. Stay informed with our comprehensive news coverage, including breaking stories, in-depth analysis, and exclusive reports. You can access our content anytime via the Eagle FM mobile app, the Eagle FM website, as well as our radio frequencies nationwide. Now we bring you real-time updates on current affairs, politics, business, technology, health, entertainment, and more. We also invite you to be part of the conversation. Subscribe to the Village of WhatsApp channel platform for the latest news alerts and updates as they happen. And remember, throughout the show, you can engage us live in studio by calling on 083-288-401. Stay connected with On the Reading News Bulletin, your reliable news partner, as Namibia gears up for the school year and beyond. Now, let's get right in today's news bulletin. As school reopens on Monday, the back-to-school period is often marked by a mix of excitement, anxiety, and pressure for both parents and teachers. Now, while many families are ready, a significant number are still scrambling to secure school placements, purchase stationery and uniforms, and prepare emotionally and financially for the new academic year. Now, this period therefore requires heightened caution, patience, and cooperation from all stakeholders involved in a child's education. From a parental perspective, one of the major concerns is last-minute school placement. Parents should be cautious of rushing into unverified schools or falling victim to scams that promise placements in exchange for money. It is important to engage directly with school administrations, follow official procedures, and seek guidance from education officers where possible. Parents should also manage expectations, both their own and their children's, understanding that delays or adjustments may occur and that flexibility is sometimes necessary. Now, financial pressure is another key issue during this time. The cost of uniform, stationery, transport, and school fees can be overwhelming, especially for families already under economic strain. Parents should be cautious not to overspend beyond their means or accumulate unnecessary debt. Prioritizing essential items, buying in stages, sharing resources where possible, and communicating openly with schools about their financial difficulties can help reduce stress and prevent children from being unfairly excluded or embarrassed at schools. Now, parents must also be mindful of their children's emotional readiness. Some learners, particularly young children or those transitioning to a new school altogether, may experience anxiety, experience fear or resistance. Now, in the rush to prepare materially, emotional preparation is often overlooked. Parents should talk, it's necessary for parents to talk to their children about what to expect and to listen to their concerns and anxieties as well. Also avoid transferring their own stress onto the children. A calm and reassuring approach can significantly go a long way as it eases a child's transition back to school. While on the teacher's side, this period calls for heightened sensitivity and patience. Teachers often ought to be cautious about making assumptions regarding learners' preparedness. Not all children, of course, will arrive with full stationery, correct uniforms, or textbooks on the very first day of school. Punitive measures, public shaming, or exclusion can deepen inequalities and discourage learning. Instead, flexibility, compassion, and clear communication with parents is essential in the opening week. Teachers also ought to be alerted in regards to overcrowded classrooms and late enrollments, which can affect lesson planning and classroom management. Maintaining proper records, ensuring learner safety, and supporting those who join late without marginalizing them are critical responsibilities during this heightened time. Collaboration with school management and parents can also help address these challenges more effectively. At the end of the day, both parents and teachers should be cautious about children's safety, particularly during the first weeks of the school. Changes in routines, transport arrangements, and pickup times can also create confusion. And also the children themselves can be confused, especially because they are transitioning from a new classroom to the next one, especially for those who are remaining at that same school. And what about more of those ones who are coming from a different school altogether, not knowing the environment, and of course, not familiar with the environment. So it requires for patience of teachers towards the children at this point in time, and also requires patience from the parents to the children at this particular point in time. So parents are requested to ensure that their children know who is collecting them, while schools should enforce safety protocols and supervision, especially for the younger learners. Ultimately, the back to school period requires a spirit of partnership. Parents and teachers should ensure that each other's allies, you know, not adversaries at all. Working together is the best for the best interests of the child, with clear communication, empathy, and understanding, which can then help ease the pressure of this transition and set a positive note for the reset of the academic year. Now joining us telephonically to discuss on back to school readiness for Monday, as of course the school calendar for 2026 in Namibia opens, is Principal Simon Kaukunga Shilongo, and he is the principal of Oshela Senior Secondary School. Let's take a listen to that conversation. A very good afternoon to you, Simon Kaukunga Shilongo, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me.
Now, Mr. Simon, as the principal of Oshela Senior Secondary School, and knowing that school is starting now on Monday, it's back to school, both parents and learners and teachers themselves are anticipating this moment. And of course, it's not going to be a smooth ride for some, because some are still looking for placement for their learners and others are still trying to buy stationery. money and also buy, of course, school uniforms. Just exactly, would you say parents and teachers themselves and the learners should prepare in this season coming up to on us now, this coming Monday?
Yeah, no, thank you very much. It's a new academic year. And yes, it is a big responsibility on the shoulders of the parents. Mm-hmm. Yes, as the school starts, parents, of course, are expected to play their part. Yeah, that is to meet the school halfway in terms of stationaries, as well as to pay all other voluntary contribution, such as there are certain schools that perhaps they are asking for contribution for the RIMS. Mm-hmm. This is the printing papers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just parents should look towards that because, yes, schools, as they start, they don't really have enough capital to kick off the academic year. So they will need support from the parent here and there.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of school placement, and at this point also, parents, we can be quite desperate in terms of finding a school for our child. Perhaps I wasn't able to apply for school for my child because I was busy one thing or another, or perhaps, you know, just many unforeseen circumstances that sometimes really are understandable. Now, it comes to back to school yet again, and I'm looking for placement for my child. What should the parents themselves be cautious of? But before you get to the parents, what should teachers themselves be cautious of? I mean, we do understand that desperation can make people do wrong stuff.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for that point. I think not a long time ago, I was just reading a press release from the Ministry of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sport, Arts and Culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, where they are cautioning teachers and all workers in schools to be cautious when it comes to bribing. You know, there will be parents that will come offer bribes or offer some sort of rewards to have their learners get admitted. Yeah, so I think this is one thing that teachers should really look, you know, out for, because parents will definitely come with a lot of offers, of which some will be tempting offers. Yeah, but all in all, teachers just to know that they are professional people and that they have to keep up to the rules that are guiding them as workers of the government.
Mm-hmm. The stories of bribes, are they real, actual stories that are happening? And with that being said, Mr. Simon, share with us a story of things of you are a principal yourself. I know you do come to hear sometimes from your fellow teachers as well, of bribes that the parents are trying to get to them to perhaps for placement and other stuff.
Yes, of course, parents can be very much desperate. Like if they want admission, and of course, you know, they will try all other type of tricks if they see that things are not moving. Yeah, of course, the story of bribe, it's really happening. But the parents, some parents, I should not say all parents, some parents are the people that are initiating these things.
Mm.
Yes, of course, you hear stories here and there of parents that want their children to be admitted and they want to offer some rewards. Yeah, which is, of course, wrong in all forms.
Mm-hmm. What are some of those rewards, perhaps, that they can that parents would really cough, or, may suggest to offer that may, of course, get the teachers tempted? I mean, especially also, I'm taking it that in different parts of the country, some perhaps in the northern part, they are capable of trying to offer even a cow, even a goat, even a chicken. And, of course, as a teacher, knowing that sometimes situation is hard at home, might be tempted to actually take the bribe.
Yeah, I think of the stories I've heard includes mostly money. I do not hear of any other things. Yeah, but mostly include money. And I think it's just that people are desperate. They want their learners, their children admitted in certain schools, and then they are really coming forth with certain, you know, stories like, if you do this, I'll have to do this. Yeah, which of course, yes, you know, for somebody to come and say the story to another person is because they did not entertain such, which I think everybody must not entertain such, because it is a problem and it might destroy the good systems that we have in our schools. Yeah, because now if you start admitting learners of parents who are able to offer some sort of rewards, what about other learners whose parents cannot afford to offer anything? Yeah, so these things are real. Of course, these things are real. There are certain parents that go to that hate of offering rewards. But such rewards, we just don't have to say rewards. They are bribes.
Yes, they are. I tell you of a story. I think four years ago, I did witness such an incident, and it was in Kommersdal. I was looking for school for my children, and there came this parent who came, at the very last minute, and he, lured the school secretary away from the public and to go and speak to her. And I believe she knew exactly what was going to happen next. And, it's cause I was following back because I wanted to talk to her as well. I didn't know exactly what they were intending to do, only to see that parent actually offer her money to say that she should find placement for her child. So really, it's a matter of, I think, integrity, one standing their ground, whether it's the teacher themselves or the parent themselves, is really a matter of integrity, because I do believe that it is definitely going to happen, and it's just a matter of standing their feet on their ground.
Yes, that's definitely it. Is a matter of integrity as teachers, as people that are working in the education fraternity. We are expected to uphold integrity. Yes, and of course, the ministry is also trying its level best to make sure that we are keeping to the norms. So, yes, when such cases happen, they are dealt with. And it's just a way of, you know, showing everybody out there that, yes, this is not right. Nobody must do it. That's why, of course, I think, though I'm not here to speak for the ministry, but I think we have all seen that press release.
Yeah, correct. In terms of stationery and school uniforms, perhaps, but majorly stationery. The list is so long, I must say. I'm not so sure back when I used to go to school whether the stationery was. The list was so many things involved. Why is it really necessary that some of those stuff should be included, like toilet papers, considering you just spoke about parents having to give some sort of contribution? But from where I see it, it's no longer seen as contribution, but rather as school fees, although we were told that school fees were abolished. What's your take on that?
I have not seen some of the list with things like toilet papers, but yes, of course, schools have a long list of stationaries. Of course, some have very short list of stationery. But what I can say is, I think the demand for the stationery is just speaking to the hard work that teachers are putting in the school. For example, I think nowadays you find that each and every school is asking learners to bring a ream of papers. Yes, yeah. And this is just to ensure, of course, that when the learners are taught, they are being assessed. So we need a lot of papers to print for those activities. And of course, we are speaking of improvising in our classrooms. Yeah, there are certain times that even if we expected that we should provide summaries on chalkboards, there are certain demonstrations, certain pictures that you want to illustrate, you know, some of the topics that we are teaching. And then we don't have textbooks in our schools. So we have to make copies of these materials, and then we give to the learners to paste in their summary books.
Mm-hmm.
So the demand of stationaries is only speaking to the commitment from the teachers. Yes, there could be some of the lists and items that perhaps are not realistic, but I cannot speak for those lists because, I actually don't send toilet papers and whatnot, but I would just say, yes, schools are asking for parents to support them in terms of rims, for example,
yeah,
or maybe any other form of stationery. It's just to ensure that we offer quality education, because that become also part of improvising. And yes, we are saying when school and parents work together well, that will make, you know, education better.
Sure.
So just to urge parents, yeah, they should really come forth and support schools, because yeah, sometimes like now we are starting. Yes, we know our government is responsible. They provide stationaries here and there. Yeah, but sometimes because of the procurement process, yeah, sometimes they are delayed, and even when they come on time, I think the demand at school level for the consumption of paper is just very high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, I've noticed when parents send letters to us, pardon me, when teachers send letters to us parents, and it's on a continuous basis, so you can imagine the amount of paper that actually goes into that. But yeah, what would you again caution us parents not to do excessively, especially on the first day of school and also the first week of school? Perhaps things that we do go overboard with, maybe that we could just be very cautious about as a principal. What is that you would say?
Yeah, no, first of all, I would just, inform the parents to be very, very vigilant. You know, this time of, the year, we have a lot of people now coming from the festive season and they are financial, drained. Such people, sometimes we have scammers that will come and take advantage of parents that are either looking for admission or in any other area regarding school. In the past, we have issues of parents being called by strangers that pretend to be teachers in certain schools and demanding that parents should pay certain amount of money, and if they don't, their children will be sent back home from school. Yeah, and some of the parents, you know, they panic without even verifying this information that they pay. The time they come to school, they'll be informed that we don't have such a person in our school. And sometimes when you follow up these numbers, they are not picked. Yeah, although, of course, you would tell them to go to the police, but most of the time, parents become victims. So parents should just be vigilant that they shouldn't be paying money to individual people who claims to be teachers at certain schools and demanding that they should pay money through their phones. So if they have to make any contribution to schools, those are now voluntary contributions that are made to schools, they should go to school themselves, or they should rather pay on school accounts.
Yeah. I think that's something very powerful to say, especially the panicking button in parents at this time around, just because, and you really do understand that some, it's not that they didn't save up money for school restarting, it's that they don't actually have enough. And sometimes their household, about 4 kids are going to school and they can only manage to buy certain aspects from the stationery list, and they really don't have. And at that point, they become so fearful to say, perhaps my kids are going to be home. Yeah. Okay. And to the learners and students, it's more for the university, right? So to the learners, whether primary school or secondary school, what message do you have for them as school starts on Monday?
As school starts on Monday, I just want to just wish the learners all the best with the 2026 academic year. Yeah, and just, of course, to tell them, you know, to go out and work very hard, to be well-disciplined, because, you know, a disciplined learner will go very, very far in life.
Discipline.
Yeah. Yeah, and just to take their education very, very serious, we have some learners that will be going to the hostel for the very first time. And, of course, hostel is a place of, you know, peer pressure and whatnot. Yeah, just to remember the reason they get there, they went to school. Yeah, and that is just for the academic purpose, that they shouldn't get influenced into many other things. Like today, the world is being taken over by drugs. This is something they should stay away from because this have a potential of ruining their futures.
Mm-hmm. What should they stay away from?
Drugs.
Oh, drugs. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Indeed. Okay. And your message to your fellow colleagues out there?
My fellow colleagues out there, I just want to tell them, let's keep pushing. For the love of a Namibian child, let's work very hard. And one day, of course, we'll get better results that we are proud of.
Correct.
Yeah, amid challenges, let's just push. We'll get it right.
Yeah, exactly. Also, I think it'll be unfair. As much as parents are excited and children, I think learners are more excited than anyone else, and teachers themselves are looking forward to going back to school. There's another aspect of those who are somewhat downcasted, and that is a group of unemployed teachers. What message would you say to them as they also definitely wish that this time around they wish to go to the classroom and have themselves a paycheck coming towards their way? So what's your message to them?
Yeah, I got just a message of positivity from them that they should stay positive, you should keep working hard in preparation of interviews. They should never give up. Of course, I know the market is a bit saturated, but they should keep preparing. Read all these documents that are being asked in interviews. And, of course, one day they will get it right. So I just want to wish them all the best for 2026. Those that are job hunting, that this one should be their year.
Exactly. Mr. Simon Kakungwa, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Radar News Analysis. We do wish you a productive 2026 academic year and all the best for your school and for your learners and new learners coming to your school on Monday.
Thank you very much. Happy Juju. Mm-hmm. I wish you all the best for the 2026 year as well.
Okay.
And let's pause here now quickly and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly to continue with yet this interesting conversation. Stay tuned.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tera ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwa tafanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Okay, and we are back now. Joining us in studio telephonically is Mr. Maungora Kavihuha, and he is from TUKNA, the Trade Union Congress of Namibia, speaking on behalf of the Teachers Union. A very good afternoon to you, Mr. Kavihuha, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, and I want to wish all Namibians a prosperous 2026.
Wonderful. Of course, Monday is the day that we are all anticipating for, anxious for, scared of, different feelings for different parents and for different learners and for different teachers. It's back to school season on Monday, and that means the road is also going to be congested. That means a busyness, and that means waking up early in the morning. What's your take for this day on Monday as it's back to school before we even get right into the conversation?
Yeah, of course, this day is very exciting that the new ones that were never in schools are joining the stream.
Correct.
Others are being promoted to the next grade. Teachers, those that are appointed in December, are joining the profession. Others are leaving the profession. So it's a very exciting day. Of course, it will be met with various challenges and animosity and uneasiness and all those kind of things, which we need to confront head on and see how we'll overcome as usual.
Indeed. It's back to school, of course, and a lot of parents still haven't found placement for their children. But I'm yet to actually hear, you know, how much we panic in the beginning of the year, always thinking that perhaps I will not find placement for the kids. I specifically remember last year when I was looking for placement for my kids, and eventually we did find. And I have come across a statement by the Ministry of Education that parents should not panic. But still, parents do panic in regards to that matter, and sometimes take actions that are unreasonable. So what's your take or what's your counsel to parents for those particular ones who have still not yet found placement for their children?
I think for the parents that haven't found the space for the for their children, comes Monday, they don't need to panic. I would say the same way. The most important aspect, the problem is not theirs. And we know that, I'm sure that the ministry always shifts the blame that parents come out at the last minute. But I don't think that is the reason. The issue here is that there's no enough space. That's the bottom line. Even if all the parents come by June this year, all of them comes on time, they will not be all of them accommodated.
Mm.
So the issue goes back to planning. That's why the parents should not feel guilty, neither pity for them if their kids didn't get the space already now. But I'm sure that with the improvement of efficiency and administration-wise, leadership-wise, things should have to be improved, because there's no reason why any period in the beginning of the year a child in Namibia should not have a space, because all the speakers are on our tips. We just have to make sure that we respond to it in terms of infrastructure.
Correct. How do you perhaps suggest that we go about this matter? Every year it's the same story. And I think, let's also first check and go back to 2025, I can't remember specifically which month, but there was a time where the Ministry of Education came up, with a way for parents to go and, look for school placement for their children, there by the teachers union, by ShopRite. That's one of the aspects that we can tackle it. And I think I would say really thumbs up to the ministry for that. But what other ways perhaps do you think we can go about to ensure that we cut down on the stress and the busyness of really trying to place our children in schools come Monday.
The most important aspect is that we need to harmonize our data system. Because all the kids that were born in 2025, in 7 years, they have to find a space in school. How many they? So that's the bottom line. So there's no excuse that we should already know that how many grade one places we should have in the next 7 years. So you have 7 years to plan for those that were born last year already. So there's no excuse whatsoever. The most important thing is what is causing this one is the arrogance of the leadership of the ministry to respond and to include everybody in terms of social dialogue, in terms of their planning, in terms of their implementation of, capital projects. So the most important, I think, that is clearly a leadership issue, is not an economic issue, neither otherwise issue. And the other one is the issues of the ministry being reluctant. Parents come in advance that I am transferred to this place. But then you have been kept there, not been responded to say that, okay, you are transferred and this should happen so that you don't come and cause congestion when the school reopens.
Yeah.
So I'm going down to the leadership issues that we need to work on. And I'm sure that the moment that we get various leadership, new leadership, I think they need to have a different approach. If they continue having the same approach, because our union had a congress last year, and the theme of our congress was the issues of compliance. We have a compliance culture. I found that one in place that way. I must comply according to that. We don't have an innovative culture. We have a compliance culture, and that is what is causing this one. I am a minister of education. The previous minister was doing this one. I was to comply. I am an ED of education. The previous ED have done this, I have to comply.
Yeah.
I am a teacher, appointed now. The previous teachers at these schools, they have doing this way, I must comply. So we have a compliance culture, and that is a huge problem that is causing us to fail, because we just have to run by, okay, what is the book says? How is the previous done? That is a compliance culture which undermines the innovation or innovating culture. And that is a bottom that we need to address.
That's an interesting point and a realistic point that you make right there. But how do you think now we can break down, perhaps not necessarily the system, but how do we then get into the system and change the way, of compliance? Because there are, teachers and sometimes actually those ones that are just newly graduated coming into the system and saying, I have this innovative idea that we can do things better and get better results. How perhaps then can we go about that? Which stakeholders need to come together and do that?
You know, the most important thing is that we have also an approach of punishing the victim. When someone rings the bell that at this school there is this happening that is compromising the operations and the quality of education, the one who raised that one is the one who end up being punished. A new person coming with new innovations that they have read and whatsoever, that person has been punished. Why? Because from the headmaster to the inspector to the director, they are enclosed in the compliance culture. So that is the problem that we have. Now, how do we break this one? It is where we go back to basics to say that even those, there's no way. I will use this word because this education officer is confusing everyone.
Okay.
The one that we used to call subject advisors.
Yeah.
There is no way you have a subject advisor who haven't written any single academic paper on his or her subject, meaning that this person is not making any research. You have a person who have to open and advise others on the content and a new development about a specific subject. But this person was reduced to be an administrator, was reduced to be a compliance person, not him or herself carrying out various investigations and even disprove some of the aspects that are set in the curriculum or in the textbook. So but it's a long way to go. But we can only do that if the leadership itself, it is also an innovative leadership, not a compliance leadership. Currently now, I'm sure that as much as we are talking, the more the situation becomes worse. But from a trade union perspective, we are not going to keep quiet. We continue raising it. Even one day after we have departed this world, one will go to hear and say that someone said this, whatever, yeah.
Yeah. Indeed. Now, as school starts on Monday, and let's talk about the stationery list. I'm of the opinion that I think we should perhaps get the list that is only necessary. You know, I don't know what really, I feel like there are some things that we can really consider very necessary, and perhaps maybe shouldn't be made like a compulsory, because not all parents that can actually afford the stationery list. And for some households, they may have children up to 4 and 5. How then do we combat such a situation whereby perhaps our parents feel, I don't know, maybe perhaps not good enough or not good parents enough to their children because they can't provide, but it's really because of means or financial aspect. We know that the economy is not favoring, it's not in anyone's favor, or at least it's not in most people's favor. So how do we perhaps maybe balance that situation? What's coming into my mind is perhaps the ministry can come through for those who are unable to cater for themselves. What's your take?
Well, I think that the issues of stationery, the issues of contributions, it is caused by the double standardness of the ministry.
Okay.
The ministry is always saying that no, there is a voluntary contribution. Now we call this one to be a compulsory voluntary contribution.
Yeah.
Do you understand? When they read in the paper, they say, don't force the parents to buy the stationaries. You should not discriminate that one. But when they go behind, they put it as a compulsory.
Yeah, that's the,
you must
that
do it because
thing.
You must contribute. You understand? So this is a double standard called it, which has introduced compulsory, voluntary contribution.
Yes.
And there's a notion that is there. So that is caused purely by the ministry. If you say there is no stationary, That is the bottom line from that the ministry should say.
Yeah.
Where I need to say that today you say this one, in the middle of a statement, you start introducing new elements.
Mm-hmm.
So many other people start misinterpreting those kind of things. The second one is to the schools and to the curriculum implementer.
Yeah.
The system is calibrated in phases. You have grade 1 to grade 3, grade what to grade what.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I believe that if you have a one thick book from grade 1, it can take you through to grade 3. From grade whatever, it can take you for that sub phase.
Yeah.
So that should be the approach, because if you go now, luckily you said that your child is entering the system only this year. Just look at the end of the year.
Yeah.
How many pages that child has wrote in that book? You will be shocked.
While
he has used only 20%,
mm-hmm.
yet a new list will come demanding a new book.
Thank you.
So these are the things that we should address so that we can become more economic and more serious. Because I'm telling you that this list is putting a burden.
It is.
On the parents, a burden on the teachers even.
Mm-hmm.
Because you cannot have a child, this one brought all the books, sitting next to the child who haven't brought any book.
Yeah.
This child is being affected psychologically, emotionally, and otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're looking at the next child next thing to him, and this person, and this, I'm not saying intention of introducing even the school uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
It's because those that can afford expensive clothes, they buy this one, and yes. the rest are remaining.
Mm-hmm.
And that's now, the issues of stationery is exactly doing that kind of, I mean psychological discrimination.
Absolutely.
And that we have to be very extra careful with. And who is responsible for this one? No one else than the ministry leadership.
Mm-hmm. You're right. Of course, that statement released by the Ministry of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports and Arts and Culture, speaks about, and I know you mentioned it, the prohibition of fees prohibits the payment of compulsory tuition and examination fees at any state school. I think, and you say it's a double standard, and I really agree with you on that one, because I feel at this point, the ministry also needs to make itself clear, although they have made themselves clear, I believe. Teachers, or that it's not clear, right?
and that's why everybody is confused.
Mm, okay. Then they need to make it clear whether we must. Can I tell you something? Last year, the school where my kids go to, and remember, I have three kids at one particular, at one same school, asked that I make payment to secure my child's coming back next year. Something I didn't do. Because at that point in time, I had other things that I was focusing on. Imagine you know that your child is going to go back to that school next year. They are asking that you give $100 to ensure that this particular child who's in grade 6 has their placement is secured for grade 7. Where does that come from? It's not something that we were doing when we were in school.
That one is caused by the desperations of the schools,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that there is no assurity when it comes to the disbursement of the funds that come from government.
Okay.
Because in most cases, the funds that come from the government come in the second quarter, I mean, in the second half of the year.
Yeah.
So from January to here, you might sit without any funding. But if it is plain to say that when the school closes, the books are processed. When the school reopened, the grant that you come from the government is already in a school's account.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these desperation attempts will not be there in place.
Mm-hmm.
So you must also know that the schools are at the heart and rock place. Rock and hard place.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of them not knowing exactly when is the funds going to be processed and what's going to be done, the schools you grant.
Mm.
So that is the most important aspect, that as soon as we introduce efficiency in our doing,
mm-hmm.
of course, some of these kind of desperate attempts that is coming from the schools in seeing how now do I deal with the situation, because I cannot come January to say that I'm waiting for the fund. That's why they reach out to those kind of, intervention.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, they are very painful. And that's why those that are responsible for the fund disbursement, those are responsible for administration or leadership, need to hear these desperations and need to address it promptly.
Mm-hmm. Mm, correct. Also, the issue of bullying. This is something that has not been left out, and I think it would do justice if we really extensively discuss on it, perhaps also on another aspect. But the issue of bullying, children still get bullied at certain schools, and I want to believe that I would somewhat put the blame on the principals not being very effective, because I remember when I went to high school, the principal at that particular time at El Dorado Secondary School put their foot down and said, if we find you bullying another learner, we will deal with you. And as a result, it sent a sort of a wave of fear in within the kids to say, okay, if I do this, I will get into trouble. But you still find some schools where children are being bullied. Where exactly then do we start, I think, when a child is being bullied in a particular school? What do you suggest?
We need to have a comprehensive policy on it. It's okay. Not only the children that are being bullied.
Okay.
Children bully each other.
Mm-hmm.
Children bully teachers.
Mm.
Teachers are being bullied by other teachers.
Yeah.
So the bullying in a school environment is the thing that is happening.
Yeah.
And I remember that last year I have two teachers who came to my office. When they just enter the office, they start crying.
Oh my word.
And if you listen to their narrative and you go and ask other teachers, you will see that this person has just been bullied completely.
Mm.
The management is targeting the person. They are creating that even the other teachers speaking to that teacher, all those kind of things. Mm. And you had even, you mentioned at Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
You heard about the teacher who was stabbed by the knife. I mean, with a knife.
From El Dorado.
Last year.
Oh, I didn't.
Okay, so we leave it there.
Okay.
For now.
Mm-hmm. For now.
So what we are saying is that the issues of bullying is continuing, and we need to work on it and see how best we can deal with it. With a culprit.
Yes.
Because there are many ways of bullying. There are physical ones you can see.
Mm-hmm.
There are other emotional. Physical ones you can easily report to the police.
Exactly.
But how do you deal with emotional bullying?
That's a good question.
Yeah. So there are many types of it, but we need to continue addressing it, and we need not to protect the perpetrator, but to deal with the perpetrator head on.
Mm-hmm.
And we see how best we can deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Okay. Now, before I do let you go, let's go in the aspect of parents. Let's hear from you. Of course, you deal with a lot of teachers, and I'm sure you deal with a lot of parents as well. What caution would you give to us parents as we start off a new week next year, a busy week filled with, of course, getting our loved ones to school? What is it that you would say should be cautious about?
Yeah, me dealing with the teachers and parents, myself, I'm also a parent.
Yeah.
So the advice, colleagues, is that let's make sure that we don't make ourselves guilty
mm-hmm.
by breaking the laws. Let us be cooperative.
Yeah.
And for the schools, let's also be responsive and sensitive. And for the ministry, let's respond quickly and ensure that the specific learners got school. They should know there's no reason why a learner should not be in school.
Mm.
But a word of warning.
Yeah.
I want to warn the regional officers, the ED and the Minister of Education.
Yeah.
That we are not going to interchange overcrowdedness of the classes on the basis of lack of spaces.
Mm.
That should be the warning that, and I'm also telling the parents,
yeah.
You should never allow your child to be taught in a class where the learners are more than the ratio. You are doing injustice to your own child.
Mm. What is
you, the teachers,
mm-hmm.
you, the teachers, you also not allow to teach the learners that are more than the ratio. You are doing injustice to the system
true.
And injustice to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You, the learners, through their unions or organizations, student organizations,
yeah.
you should never allow the learners to be taught in a class where they are more than the ratio. You are doing injustice to your members.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important that this three leg, we have to denounce and condemn overcrowdedness of the classes. And any person who is forced to take more what the ratio requires,
yeah,
tell that person to tell you in writing, and I want that letter to be sent to my office so that we can deal with this situation, whether on the legal basis or on another way basis.
Mm-hmm. Mm. You spoke about teacher-to-learner ratio. What is the actual teacher-to-learner ratio?
Actual is 1 to 35
mm-hmm.
in primary, 1 to 30 in secondary, and 1 to 15 in grade 0.
Mm. Repeat that. 1 to 35 in primary.
Mm-hmm.
1 to 13 secondary school.
Yes.
And 1 to 15 in pre-primary.
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Mangora Kavihua, it's been a wonderful time engaging you right here on the Reader News Analysis. I do appreciate your insights and sentiments with us, and of course an eye-opener in certain subjects that I also didn't have an understanding of. I wish you the very best for the year 2026 as you deal with the learners and the teachers and the parents as well within your trade union. Thank you so much, Sam.
Thank you very much for having me, mm-hmm. and I'm always available to public, being parents, being teachers, being any other concerned citizen about education and labor issues.
Yeah. Okay.
Take it back.
Bye. And of course, you had it from education stakeholders, that of course, being now Mr. Mahangora Kavihua from Tukna, and previously to that, we listened to the principal of Oshela Senior Secondary School, that is Simon Kaukongwa Shilongo. Now, of course, we do post here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly. This is what we have for you in terms of today's discussion in back to school preparation or discussion for back to school on Monday. Now, as a teacher or perhaps as principal yourself or a learner or perhaps a teacher, a parent, please do come through and air opinions and contributions right here on the Reader News Analysis. This is a platform we offer you to speak to the masses right here, as your voice gets into, either through our frequency or our app, it reaches the masses worldwide and you can air opinions and contributions. So perhaps you have some advice or some counsel that you want to offer to fellow parents out there or perhaps to fellow colleagues. 0832888401 is the number in studio. And I'm actually thinking, I'm wondering for those who are in the diaspora and sometimes would probably want to engage us right here. Perhaps for now, we can encourage you to drop a comment, via, our Facebook page that is under the advertisement poster right there. But otherwise, 0832888401 is the number in studio. Please come through your opinions and contributions right here on the Reader News Analysis. For now, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We have yet more coming in your way. Stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Ikurane ngino wapumbwa Eva tele ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete okoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana kono ngeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu honda doili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ngeta shake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka okone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM onore satimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile ko mderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafelane Eagle FM di ae
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear.
Indeed, Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional right without fear and being pushed into the corner. That is the platform right here, your number one talk radio station, where we offer you the platform to speak up about your opinions and contributions right here without fear of being condemned or actually being judged. Now, of course, let's cross over to economic indicators before we bring you news beyond the borders of Namibia, so you can be well updated in what's happening around us within our neighborhoods, neighboring countries, and of course, far and beyond. Now, $1 today is equals to 16 Namibian dollars and 45 cents. As you know, the South African dollar is pegged to the Namibian dollar. That is an equal ratio. So $1 Australian is equals to 11 Namibian dollars point 01 cents, and £1 sterling on the other hand is equals to 22 Namibian dollars and 12 cents. One Swiss franc is equals to 20 Namibian dollars and 63 cents today. Now, one dinar, that is a United Arab Emirates dinar, is four Namibian dollars and 48 cents, and one Botswana pula is equals to one Namibian dollar and 23 cents. Before actually we do cross over to news beyond the borders, let's see how much is one Kenyan shilling. Now, one Kenyan shilling is equals to 0.13 Namibian dollars, while one Uganda is equals to 0.0046 Namibian dollars. Now, thus, I've come to realize that the Namibian dollar is quite strong compared to other currencies. Yeah, bear that in mind. Could be a discussion for another day. Of course, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly with news beyond the borders of Namibia. Stay tuned right here on the radar news analysis, only on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the I.
Welcome back and brace yourself for news beyond the borders of Namibia right here on your number one talk radio station. Of course, we're starting off in South Africa, our neighboring country, before we move over to other parts of other areas right here. Now, of course, we always start off economic regionally, and then we move over to continental news. Then you can expect international news. Starting off in South Africa, back to school road safety drive begins in Rustenburg, as a school has already reopened in South Africa. Let's take a listen.
He said to launch a back to school. Transport Minister Barbara Creasy is set to launch a back-to-school safety campaign at the Bapong Weybridge along the N4 outside Rustenburg. That's in the northwest. In fact, there'll be a special focus, we're told, on scholar transport. Watching the story for us is SABC News reporter Tabiso Moss, who joins us now live from where this campaign is likely to begin. And Tabiso, this is such an important focus from the Transport Department, given how year in, year out, we often report on really devastating accidents involving this mode of transport.
Indeed, Ayanda, good morning to you and our viewers at home. Yes, the minister is here in the Northwest Province and will join us in a moment just to talk to the issues of, you know, scholar transport challenges. As we know that those challenges are well documented here in the Northwest Province. We spoke about buses that are unroadworthy, and we also understand that right here at Bapong Weybridge, some of these buses will be inspected later on as part of this back to school campaign program, where the minister is focusing solely on the issue of transport, scholar transport in the Northwest Province. As we have seen previously, some of the contractors have abandoned their roads, and there were some issues with their payments, delayed payments from the Department of Community Safety and Transport Management in the province. Let me speak to the minister just to get a sense of how is she going to assist maybe the province in terms of those challenges. As you'll remember that also the Human Rights Commission probed this matter last year. There were public hearings where they were, you know, hearing from other people who are involved in this issue of scholar transport. Minister, thank you very much for joining us this morning here on SABC News. Just talk to us about why focus on scholar transport on your back to school campaign.
Well, I think what we are doing this morning is that we're in the final phase of our December-January road safety campaign. And this phase is focusing firstly on, of course, all of the traffic that will be returning to the main urban centers after the holiday period.
Still, in regards to school in South Africa, move over to another aspect of over 5,000 Gauteng pupils are still yet to get placement.
Wow. 358,000, you know, between your grade 1 and grade 8. And out of that number, we still have over 5,000 unplaced. And we continue to make sure that those are placed. Our pressure area is Gauteng. In Gauteng, like you're looking at the Ekurhuleni North, Ekurhuleni South, and Johannesburg East. Those are your areas where we have big numbers when you're looking at the 5,000 that we still need to place. So we are working tirelessly just to make sure that we place those. Those that are happy about the system, they will not say anything. That's the sad part about people. They will not advocate for you. They are happy. And then you have a few that are unhappy. They will then make, calls that the system is not working. And we will always have this because we are dealing with different parents each and every year. There's different parents that we are dealing with. We've been managing this system now for the past 10 years now that we're celebrating last year. We are moving into the 11th year. That's why we are saying we need to look at the numbers when we say the system is not working.
And that was the back-to-school story in South Africa. Let's move over now to Zambia and catch up on other stories right there in Zambia. Of course, economists welcome government mining currency policy. Financial economist Bright Chizonde says that the government's decision to allow some mining companies to pay their tax obligations in Chinese currency is a progressive step. He told the news that the move will help reduce the government's cost of debt servicing, noting that Zambia's gross international reserves are not entirely dominated in US dollars, despite being reported as such. He further say that collecting tax in renminbi, that is RMB, will help stabilize the economy by increasing the portion of reserves held in Chinese currency. And also, yeah, let's take a listen to that economist.
For years, currency conversions have quietly eaten into Zambia's mining revenues, costing both government and investors millions in fees and exchange losses. That could soon change. Government has allowed selected mining companies to pay part of their tax obligations in Chinese currency, a move economists say will ease pressure on foreign reserves and reduce debt servicing costs. Financial economist Bright Chizonde says, for Chinese-owned mines, the policy simplifies everyday operations.
This decision will therefore help in stabilizing the economy by increasing denominated in Chinese currency. Secondly, this will also reduce the cost of debt servicing through direct payment of the debt component that is in Chinese currency without the need for converting from US dollars or kwacha.
Economist Kelvin Chisanga says the benefits are not just theoretical.
And this basically also be able to make saving on the Zambian side in terms of 3 to 4%, and also on the side of the investors, they will be able to save approximately about 5%. Meaning, if we have money in surplus from that context, then they will be able to have more money to do other things for the investors' side.
Another economist, Luwinda Habazoka, explains that for mines selling copper directly to China, earning and paying taxes in the same currency simply makes business sense.
If we diversify currencies within which we operate, we have a trade surplus with China, those inflows are going to cushion the value of the Zambian kwacha, because demand will shift away from the US dollar, which is in most cases very scarce, to the Chinese yuan.
Trade expert Gilbert Nkamba says the move also reflects Zambia's shift in trade reality.
Foreign debt with China is around $5.7 billion. So that means that our trade with China is more than any other country. So receiving mine taxes in terms of the Chinese currency is very positive, because that's where much of our foreign trade is.
Daisy Mulenga, ZNBC News, Lusaka.
Still in Zambia, the economy of Zambia has regained stability, says the finance minister of Zambia.
Of course, much more needs to be done, and perhaps even more importantly, the stability that eluded us 2022, 2023, I'm not sure whether 2024. I think 2024 was better.
No, that's when
we had the worst drought. Yeah. So the stability in the exchange rate, inflation, was something that, of course, gave us a lot of concern. But I think we've concluded this year very successfully. Stability is back. Just to remind you that, June or July 2021, June or July 2021, the kwacha then had reached as high as 22 kwacha to the dollar. 5 years ago, almost 5 years ago, we had reached almost 22 kwacha, not almost, certainly was above 22 kwacha to the dollar. Today, 5 years later, the kwacha is at what now?
Almost 20, 2021.
So this is what I mean by saying that we've had a very successful year.
Also another aspect. Let's cross over now to Kenya, where Kenya has posted a stronger economic growth in its third quarter.
It seems that if you show the average Kenyan, who of course is currently struggling with rising prices, inflation, etc., if you showed them these strong growth numbers, they'll probably be surprised. Are you, as an economic analyst, surprised? How can the government justify this growth?
Happy New Year, Uche. Indeed, these growth numbers could come as a surprise to the ordinary Kenyan, not least because of the rising unemployment. Unemployment among the youth stands at about 67%. And that's partly driven because of the type of growth we have. We have growth in capital-intensive sectors, public sector-led sectors, but labor-intensive sectors haven't grown as much. So indeed, it does create two narratives of sorts.
Right, right. And happy new year to you, Ken. Sorry I neglected to say that. But of course, let's take a look at the sectors the government is pointing to. Agriculture, construction, mining. They say those have been the key drivers of growth. Is it clear what is driving the expansion in these particular sectors?
It's partly clear. If you look at agriculture, we are seeing a rise in milk processing. So there are more liters going to the dairy processors, and that's boosting the dairy industry. Also, in the cut flowers segment, we are seeing more exports of cut flowers, and that has also boosted the agriculture sector quite well. When you come to construction, the tricky thing about construction is it combines both house construction and road construction. Road construction last year had come to a stall because many road contractors had not been paid, and many of them had down their tools. But this year, last year, there was a big push towards paying those pending bills, and many of those road contractors are back on their road. So that's why we are seeing a growth in that segment. On the mining segment, it's not very clear. The report didn't go into great details. But of course, it's not a secret that there's been a lot of conversation around gold mines over the last few months.
Well, on that note, what is the outlook? Because President Ruto has said that he expects growth of 5.6% in 2025 overall. Is this growth in GDP sustainable, looking at the fundamentals right now, in the near and long term? What's your take on that? And certainly, what are the biggest risks to growth going forward?
Well, it's a good thing that interest rates are coming down, and they'll continue to come down. So that would be a big boost to the economy. It means cheaper credit and more money circulating in the economy. And I guess that's what informs that growth forecast. That said, interest rates still are coming down at a very slow pace. Members of the public are getting a bit impatient. Non-performing loans standing at 16.5%. And if we continue with the path of high youth unemployment, the events we saw in 2024 might just come back, where you have a lot of instability. So it's in the best interest to get small businesses back to business, get them employing people, and in reducing that and levels of unemployment.
Meanwhile, unsafe farming practices have raised food safety fears in Uganda.
These markets feed the nation. Fresh fruits, vegetables, and grains are sold every day to families across Uganda, often straight from farm to stall. They are very popular. To meet demand for produce that looks and feels good and cope with rising costs, farmers rely heavily on pesticides and chemicals, sometimes using them often or in unsafe ways. And a lack of regulation means the farmers often get away with it.
When customers come to the market, they usually choose food that looks big and healthy. Most of it has been sprayed with chemicals. The organic ones, like these sweet potatoes, are smaller and people don't want them. As traders, we go with what makes money.
Poor storage and handling add to the risk, especially in grains where aflatoxins can quietly build up. These are toxic compounds caused by mold that can contaminate crops. Many farmers don't understand the dangers. They believe what they are doing is actually producing safer foods.
What we are worried about is, first of all, the excessive application in the gardens, and then applying the chemical after the fruits have been harvested, especially tomatoes. And I'm sure all of you who have purchased tomatoes from markets have seen that whitish chemical on the tomatoes. So farmers apply it thinking that it is going to protect the fruits, not to decay.
For many households, price, not safety, is the deciding factor. Medical experts say long-term exposure to contaminated food can have serious consequences.
It's important for people to know that no one is born with cancer, but somebody may be born with a cell that has a potential to turn into a cancer cell. Now, many of these agrochemicals have the capacity to induce the process of this cell turning into a cancer cell.
Uganda records about 35,000 new cancer cases every year, with cervical, breast, and prostate cancers among the most common. While no single cause is blamed, doctors say food safety cannot be ignored.
Uganda produces enough food to feed its population, but weak regulation, limited testing and enforcement gaps mean safety often comes last, turning food into a public health risk, especially for children and vulnerable communities.
Experts say pressure to harvest quickly, combined with limited farmer training, is driving unsafe practices at the farm level.
These foods that are prone to aflatoxins are highly consumed. And if they are highly consumed and highly demanded within the country but also outside the country, that means money. That means money. That means the market. That means revenue. That means income. That means economic but also social development. So we need to harness these opportunities.
Health experts say stronger enforcement and public awareness are urgently needed, because in a country rich in food, hunger may not be a major problem, but food safety certainly is. Mike Kobaleke, CGTN, Kampala.
Ethiopians celebrate Jenna as Christmas falls on January the 7th. Now, millions of Ethiopians are marking Jenna, the country's Christmas celebration held on the 7th. And let's take a listen.
Deeply rooted in the traditions of the Ethiopian Orthodox Tewahedo Church, Ethiopian Christians celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ on January 7th and on January 6th on leap years. In the Ethiopian Orthodox Tewahedo Church, Christmas comes after a 44-day fast known as Tsoma Nabiat, or the Fast of the Prophets.
The Ethiopian Orthodox Tewahedo Church observes seven major fasting periods. One of them is the Fast of the Prophets, which prepares us to welcome the birth of our Lord Jesus Christ. The fast begins in late December and continues until January 7. Just as the prophets waited in hope for the birth of Christ while fasting, we also fast in the same spirit as we commemorate his birth.
The fast concludes with an all-night church service on Christmas Eve.
It's almost midnight on the eve of Christmas, and I am at the ancient Bata Mariam Monastery, which is located inside the National Palace in Addis Ababa, where worshippers and the clergy have gathered to pray, sing, and commemorate the birth of Jesus Christ.
Starting at 7:30 p.m., they conduct St. Yarde's liturgical chants, and at the moment, they are recounting the afterbirth of Jesus, wrapped in swaddling clothes and laid in a manger.
The celebration of Ethiopian Christmas is not only limited to the Ethiopian Orthodox Tewahedo Church.
The Ethiopian Evangelical Church, particularly in Assemblies of God Church, we celebrate with worship. That includes the preaching of the gospel. It is about, rethinking the love of God and the redemptive plan of God for the lost humanity. So this is how we worship. In addition to worship in the evangelical church, we are always conducting social activities. We collect monies and items from believers, and we share what we have with people, maybe poor people in the church, those who are in need.
On Christmas Day, the holiday is marked by various traditional events as families gather to share meals and enjoy time together. A traditional game similar to field hockey as well as a horse riding competition are often played, making Christmas more than a celebration of faith. Beka Toma for CGTN, Addis Ababa.
An interesting aspect about Ethiopia that I only got to find out around about last year is that they have their own calendar. They're not on the same calendar as we are, so they are on a different calendar, different year, different month, different day. Hence why even Christmas for them is celebrated in January, on January the 7th. So they are literally, almost to say, Ethiopia is in another world on its own. Of course, very smart people, very intelligent, that work, and they work also 24/7 around the clock. It's not like for us, we 5 o'clock is knock-off time, and you do get few people still working, some other companies that are working throughout the night, but then for them, companies keep on running all throughout, taxis on the road. And another interesting aspect is that they don't have robots. It's interesting how somebody just knows where they have to go, no robots whatsoever and whatnot. But yeah, it's an interesting story that I need to also come and share here at one point in time. So now let's move over to Nigeria, whereby Nigeria has implemented reform aimed at widening its tax net. Let's take a listen.
Built around fiscal equity, shielding low-income earners while asking more from the wealthy and profitable businesses. At the center of the reforms is a sharp expansion of tax exemptions for Nigeria's low-income earners and small businesses. While low-income earners are exempted from pay-as-you-earn tax, small companies with a gross turnover of $70,000 or less are not required to pay companies' income tax. In addition to that, companies' income tax has now been reduced to 25% from the previous 30%.
These reforms are designed to promote fiscal equity. What does that mean? If you are low-income earner, you are exempted from paying POIE from January next year. That is one-third of our workers, both private and public sector combined. And do you know what the amount is? 100,000 naira or less. One-third of our people who are working cannot boast of 100,000 naira a month.
The reforms also address the perennial problem of multiple taxation, harmonizing about 70 taxes into a unified system to be administered by the renamed Nigeria Revenue Service. It also digitizes the collection process for better efficiency and transparency and introduces taxation for digital assets like cryptocurrencies while redefining Nigeria's middle class, offering relief to moderate earners while increasing contributions from the country's highest paid workers. A group officials say is very small.
A person who earns 3 million naira a month will see some marginal increases, maybe like 10K. It's not a lot of money per month. I know it's hard to even part with an additional 10K. If you earn 10 million naira per month, your additional tax would increase. You might get to 500K a month. If you earn 20 million naira and so on and so forth. But before you can even get to 25% of your income as tax, you must be earning at least 120 million naira a year.
But on the streets, opinions are divided over the new tax policy.
You want to come and tax people that are crying out, like people can even barely feed right now. People can barely feed, like a 3 square meal. So what do you want to come and task? If you put things in place and you're asking these people, okay, give back. If there are good roads, there are electricity, and you're tasking people, joyfully will pay. But you're putting tax reforms and people are suffering. Right now, I don't think I'm happy with the tax reform, but let's see where it goes.
This is the first time we see government performing positively. There's one thing we need to realize in Nigeria. If you don't use tax reform, you will continue borrowing money from overseas, continue borrowing money from IMF, and continue being a borrower, you will not be a spender. The tax reform is very, very important and realistic.
Analysts warn that success will depend on how carefully the reforms are implemented, especially in Nigeria's vast informal economy, which accounts for the bulk of the country's workforce.
These tax laws are good. This is the ideal. This is what happens in the advanced economies. But when you want to replicate it here, you have to do it strategically. You have to do it cautiously. You have to do it in a way that you will not create any major pushback. Because the mere hearing of reform, tax reform alone, is already sending a lot of negative signals to people.
One must also acknowledge that every society that works everywhere in the world, taxes are the primary source of government revenue, and that governments need those revenues to deliver social service and to build infrastructure and to drive economic development.
But there are fears about cost. Economists say businesses newly brought into the tax net may pass additional cost onto consumers, at least in the short term.
That cuts across the table for medium-sized businesses that are currently getting away with not paying taxes, who will no longer be able to escape. You know, they will pay their taxes now, so they will have to recoup that cost from somewhere, and they pass it on to the consumer where it's possible.
At just around 13%, Nigeria has among the lowest tax-to-GDP ratio on the continent. The government is hoping to change the narrative with the new tax laws by simplifying compliance, widening the tax base, curb evasion, and boost revenue collection for development. DG Bademasi, CGTN, Lagos, Nigeria.
Meanwhile, President Donald Trump says he will run Venezuela after seizing President Maduro in a military assault. And of course, oil tankers assist at Venezuela coast. Let's take a listen.
Now, the United States says it has seized two oil tankers with connections to Venezuela, one that's reported to be empty and one that was boarded in the North Atlantic. Now, the U.S. Coast Guard had been pursuing it for weeks since intercepting it off the Venezuelan coast. And during the chase, it changed its name and adopted a Russian flag. But for more of the story and the Russian connection, we cross now live to SABC News correspondent Dasha Chernyshova, who's in Moscow. Dasha, good morning. So any response to these developments from the Russian authorities?
Well, indeed, we've heard the Russian Foreign Ministry issuing a statement and urging the United States to provide for the humane and dignified treatments of the Russian nationals who were on board of that oil tanker, because Russia is saying that the tanker came under the Russian flag and started sailing under the Russian flag back on the 24th of December 2025. So Russia is now demanding the uninterfered release and transfer of those nationals to the Russian soil. And Russian Transport Ministry has earlier been issuing its own statement suggesting that what has happened led to the failure of connection between this tanker and the Russian side. So as of 12 GMT on Wednesday, there's been no contact between the tanker and the Russian side. Now, Russia has been critical of what has happened with the Russian authorities, some lawmakers saying that the actions of the United States, they amount to the piracy, and the Russian officials saying that on the high sea there is the freedom of navigation, and it is absolutely against the UN Convention on Maritime Law of 1982 to any country to get on board of another vessel on the high sea without their own permit. So this has been described as the violation of the international maritime law in Russia as well. And obviously, the question is how this is all going to affect the restoration of the ties between Moscow and Washington and wider geopolitical context as well.
Dasha, as you say, Russia calling it piracy. The United States, for their part, saying that these vessels were part of a shadow fleet that were trying to evade sanctions that were meant to restrict Venezuela and other actors from exporting oil illegally. Is this something that the Russian authorities also mentioned or tried to respond to?
Well, the Russian authorities have said that this oil tanker has started navigating under the Russian flag very late last year. And as of that, they stress that all of the international laws on that have been adhered to and they have been respected. Therefore, Moscow is saying that what the U.S. has done is the violation of those international norms. But having said that, you have to keep in mind that this tanker, according to the reports from the Russian Foreign Ministry and as well as Russian media, has been shadowed by the U.S. Coast Guard vessel for weeks. And we're also hearing that this tanker has not been violating the territorial waters of any country. It has not been sailing in the territorial waters of the United States. The Russian authorities have been saying that it was about 4,000 kilometers away from the borders, from the coast board of the United States. And this, Russia has been saying that that's excessive attention that has been given to this oil tanker has created some sort of abnormal situation.
And of course, with that, we have now come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dingi program. And from me, the Afa Happy Jojo, it is goodbye. I'll see you again next time, same place, same radio frequency. Of course, we'll be here from 1300 hours to 1430, bringing you On the Radar News Analysis. Goodbye.